Well, good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Jesus, our Messiah. The name of this broadcast is Cross the Border, and I'm Nicholas, and this is a live Prophecy Reality weekly edition. Today, the first hour, I want to review a world premiere movie, or documentary, really, that was released this week, and I have the whole thing here, and I've watched it twice already, and would like to share it all with you, and I have some critiques of it, because that's what review is all about, but it does answer a few questions, at least hypothetically speaking, when you're looking for answers or trying to unravel a mystery. Anything that gives you a few more clues and a few more pieces can be enlightening. So we'll take a look at that. Second hour, we're going to get into some current events and things like that, some articles that I was looking at. The dollar devours the euro, and talking about money matters, speaking of the mark of the beast and such things. And how about this old one here? If you vote, you have no right to complain. Or wait a minute. If you don't vote, you have no right to complain. Which one is it? Then we'll talk about that too in the second hour and much, much more. First, let's start off with this gem I found during my study this week in Isaiah 27, verse 1. In that day, the Lord, with his sore and great and strong sword, shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent. Even Leviathan, that crooked serpent. And he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. You know, I don't remember reading that before, even though I have read it before. I know I have read it before, because I have done this study before through the entire book of Isaiah. So I must have read it. I just didn't remember it. But it seems so much pertinent now that I've exhaustively studied prophecy, and especially about the dragon that came up out of the sea, or the beast that came up out of the sea. We learn that it is a dragon. But in Isaiah's day, the dragon was still in the sea, I presume. Anyway, thought that was a nice little gem. Let's see. Everybody ready? Venom. Yes, I think Dale's ready for it in the chat room. Say hello, Dale, Fireman Mike, and Stephen and Ellie in the chat room, and everyone else listening wherever you are listening from. And this is a documentary, so you don't really need to see the video. It's called a movie. I think there's some difference between movies and documentaries. There's really nothing to see except people talking, so hearing it, for those of you that are listening on the app, is just fine. And you can find this movie easily on BitChute, Watch the Water, produced by Stu Peters. But anyway, I think we should start watching it anyway. So let's do that here. Let me make sure I turn on that sound. Desktop audio is on, and let's play.
So earlier this month, a lot of you may remember a post that I made on my Telegram channel. There was a lot of concern about the water and not to drink it. And there were certain things that I could say and could not say. And I referenced that certain people's lives might be at risk. And one of those people is here with me now, Dr. Brian Artis. Thanks a lot for being here.
I do really appreciate the opportunity to do this. Yeah, this is actually going to be the only time I've ever been nervous in any interview. I'm not kidding. Like, I've never been nervous to discuss anything in relationship to the COVID pandemic whatsoever. But this has bothered me and has scared me.
Putting things out is probably oftentimes the best way to protect yourself. But people have lost their lives over what you're about to tell the world.
I have to get this off my chest. My spirit's like screaming to say something and bring it to the forefront. to protect as many innocent lives as possible. That's all I've been trying to do since May of 2020. As you know, when I read Anthony Fauci's memo on remdesivir, when I actually just hyperlinked, clicked the links to the studies that he was quoting saying that remdesivir was safe and effective, I knew right away that he was lying. I knew right away that this drug was going to be used to mass murder a whole bunch of innocent people in America that did not need to die. Then he was going to sell the world on the idea in the media that they were dying of a virus, when in fact I knew they were being poisoned to death with this drug. I knew 30% of all people were going to experience multiple organ failure, kidney failure, septic shock, and hypotension. That's what the studies said. Now we're a year and a half after that, and it's exactly the numbers that I said based on those studies. I'm pretty much called the remdesivir guy everywhere I go, which is odd for a retired chiropractor to be referenced as a pharmaceutical guy. But it is true, remdesivir is a very toxic, deadly drug. There are a lot of medical doctors and professionals who will mention it that as it's just proven to be ineffective. It is not ineffective. It is very toxic and deadly. It is known and proven to actually injure specific organs in your body. It targets specific organs. This is a part of why I think my spirit is so moved to make sure this gets out, is that in January, January 21st of this year, so just 2 months ago, the FDA decided to authorize remdesivir as the only drug to be authorized to be used in all newborns in this country. I cannot even fathom the men or women in charge that would actually do that. So it's now been moved since January 21st of 2022. It's been moved out of hospitals as the only drug to be used, only allowed in hospitals this entire pandemic. Now they're moving it into in and out of hospital care for children as young as newborns 7 pounds heavy through the 18-year pediatric age range. It's the only authorized drug. There is nothing else that they're allowing for COVID-19 treatment. I find that incredibly evil. And then they've also now canceled monoclonal antibody uses throughout the United States and all U.S. territories for COVID-19 early treatment, and they're moving remdesivir to the infusion centers where they were using monoclonal antibodies as the only IV infusion drug allowed. I have been moved with one singular purpose since May of 2020. When I read Anthony Fauci's memo about remdesivir, I felt this spark inside of me that I now had to go voice to the world a warning to try to protect as many innocent lives as possible from being killed. So let's talk about what happened. It all started with a text. There's a medical doctor that I admire and love because he is nonstop from the beginning of COVID. Has had the ability to project information and say to people around the world, you do not have to fear COVID. We have an answer. This guy has been on many stages with me. He still practices right now medicine and is an ER doc. And he sent me a text. It actually was dated December 1st. And I did not see it until like December 18th. I don't know how I didn't see it, but the text read, hey, Dr. Artis, if you got bit by a rattlesnake, would you go to a hospital and get antivenom? And I realized when I saw him that he must have saw an interview I did on InfoWars. So Kate Daly did an interview with me and wanted to go over my thoughts of monoclonal antibodies. Well, I had been given some research studies that actually bothered me. I didn't like the idea based on the data in these research studies. I didn't think monoclonal antibodies were safe long-term. Not short-term, but long-term. Right. Now, I read the actual text message, got in the shower, and while I was in the shower, I was sitting there thinking, why would he send me that text? It has nothing to do with COVID. Like, zero. Nothing to do with COVID. So I'm going through this, and I'm thinking about the text, and all my brain keeps going to is, why is he mentioning, wouldn't I go get antivenom? Is there something about antivenom I don't know? So I actually got a shower, went and got on the internet, and I wanted to know what is antivenom, only to find out that most antivenoms are monoclonal antibodies or polyclonal antibodies. And then I got it. Then I knew why he sent it to me. He wanted me to immediately see a question that he knew I would say, of course I would. If I got bit by a rattlesnake, of course I'm going to go to the hospital and get antivenom. So in his mind, I think he knew this was a way, or God inspired him to send me this message, that Dr. Artis would be able to relate yes to the answer, then go figure out why it is he would say yes. Okay, this is where it all started. I will repeat what Steve Kirsch said to an audience with me last month. He said, if the CDC says something to do, you do the opposite. If the NIH says to do something, go the opposite. Yeah. FDA, do the opposite. Yeah. I'm sitting there realizing that antivenom is monoclonal antibodies, and then I immediately revert back to, in my own head, I'm not trusting anything the CDC, NIH, or FDA says. Is our federal health agencies, are they recommending monoclonal antibodies for COVID-19? Now, this is in the middle of December. No, they're not. They've been bad-mouthing monoclonal antibodies this whole time.
Stripped them out of Florida when DeSantis wanted to use them.
And then January 21st of this year, they totally stripped out monoclonal antibodies. They do not want you touching monoclonal antibodies. They also didn't want you from the beginning to touch hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
They also don't want you touching ivermectin. They also don't want you touching NAC.
Yes.
And acetylcysteine. So the things they tell you to avoid, we know they're telling you to avoid because they work. So when I realized that the federal health agencies actually were not supporting monoclonal antibodies, I mean, it's very, in an instant, I realized I was wrong.
Right.
That the CDC, NIH, and the FDA are bad-mouthing monoclonal antibodies for a reason. They know they work.
And we believe that this is because they want people intentionally to not recover.
Absolutely certain.
Yeah.
No, there's no doubt about that. Oh, no, this is a... This actually got way more evil for me since I read that text than even before I read the text. I cannot believe the amount of evil behind this pandemic with what I've realized since then. I realized all of a sudden that monoclonal antibodies are anti-venom. The federal government doesn't want us using anti-venom. Why are they bashing antivenom, and why are we finding antivenom works against COVID? Is it not a virus? Is it a venom? Like, this is what I want to know. Like, is COVID a venom, and this is why they don't want you using monoclonal antibodies?
I mean, that sounds completely insane as a theory.
It is completely insane.
I mean, how would the masses be infected by snake bites?
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you believe the mass media is controlled?
Of course.
You actually do believe that?
Yes.
So you believe that whatever's being pumped out in the media is being orchestrated and controlled?
Of course.
Like across all of it?
Across all of it.
Okay, good. All right, so in my head, I was like, okay, how do they keep people on that story? So there's this mass media group who are telling a huge story. They're all telling the same story around the world. Whenever anybody says anything against that narrative, what do they use now to combat that in the mainstream media?
Disinformation.
Yeah, they call them fact checkers.
Yeah, fact checkers, yeah.
Fact checking is the opposite of fact checking.
The arbiters of lies are the fact checkers.
By definition, fact checkers are to divert you from truth and take you back to a narrative you're being sold worldwide.
Right.
If it's true, that COVID could actually be snake venom. And how I got there was they don't support the use of antivenom called monoclonal antibodies
right. Because
they work. The easiest way to figure that out is, has that ever been fact-checked? And I wanted to know, was there ever any mention that the source could have been a snake?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I couldn't believe it. Over and over and over in the media in January and February of 2020 are nonstop publications that the original source could either be from bats, snakes, or pangolins. And every time the snake is mentioned, fact checkers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, constantly fact check it and spin it to the bats. There's no fact checking about bats. They keep letting you look at bats. In the beginning, in January of 2020, the scientists inside of China said this can't be from these bats. These bats hibernate and it's the winter. When they did genetic sequences from the antibodies in the people who were sick in Wuhan, they found that their genetic sequence was not most like bats. They were most like two snakes. Proteins from the Chinese crate and the king cobra. Then I find in April of 2020, there's a research study published in France where they're finding that the receptors in the brain called nicotinic acetylcholinesterase receptors, that these are actually bound most tightly to snake venom of crate and cobra is what they're finding, and that the spike protein from SARS-CoV-2 is most identical to Chinese crate and king cobra venom. Then I find out that there's an actual doctor who works at the University of Pittsburgh in May.
This is insane right here.
In May of 2020.
Yep.
Works in a computational lab dealing with genetic sequencing. And he's been researching for 5 months. Sequencing of spike proteins. Yeah. Trying to solve the mystery of SARS-CoV-2 victims. And he says he's got a big thing to... Big press release. They're going to actually announce all their findings. And Bing Liu is his name.
Set back in the quest to understand coronavirus after a researcher is shot and killed. 37-year-old Bing Liu was on the verge of making significant findings on COVID-19.
And that's when I freaked out. That's when I freaked out. Also, all of the clippings in the media when they interview his boss, who is still at the University of Pittsburgh, last name is Bahar. Every time he was interviewed, he said that they were going to publish the work they found through Bing Liu's work in their department. That's never been published. I'd like to know why a year and a half later that's never been published.
A year and a half now.
Where is it? And then all of a sudden the realization came that this is the great lie. When I say that they have lied to you about everything in relationship to COVID, they've even lied about the viral part of COVID. Now you have to understand here, my entire stance for the last year and a half has been to educate, warn people about hospital protocols because of a drug called remdesivir.
Right.
So, in this realization that this could all be related to venom, something bothered me in the January 21st EUA that came out from the FDA about remdesivir. In this 42-page document, it actually says there's only one drug that cannot be co-administered with remdesivir at the same time because it negates the antiviral properties of remdesivir, and that drug is hydroxychloroquine. In 2020, January, there's this incredible study that's published where there's been over like a 10-year period where a company has been funding a research study gene mapping all the genes of the venoms and proteins and peptides inside of king cobra venom. And in January 2020, they published their findings. Oh, ask me if I was shocked when I saw that it was 19 toxic venom proteins that they isolated that specifically target organs in your body. So I go to the funding part of this study, and I want to know, well, who funded this and how many companies? It says that the majority of the companies funding and studies funding came from a company called Genentech. Genentech is a subsidiary of a company called Roche. I don't know anything about these companies. I've never even heard of them. The employees of Genentech, who were the authors of the study, said they have a conflict of interest because they actually hold shares and stocks in Roche. And all I did was go like this. This is not a joke. I was like, Genentech? I've never heard of Genentech. Is there a correlation between Genentech and Gilead? This is not a joke. I typed it on the internet. Is there a connection to Genentech and Gilead? Oh my God. Gilead bought two facilities that deal with biological studies from Genentech in 2011 and then brought 55 of their executives into Gilead in 2011. Just when that King Cobra study started. Gilead is the manufacturer of remdesivir. Guess what's been known since 2005? Blocks the nicotine receptors in the brainstem being injured by cobra venom and viper venom. Guess what drug does that? Hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine. Remdesivir, packaged and stored as it is delivered to hospitals, comes in a little glass vial. It's called lyophilized powder. It actually has a white to yellowish tint. Guess what color snake venom has when it's stored? Then to be diluted in sodium chloride or distilled water to be administered in an IV. Or if people are buying king cobra venom lyophilized, they mix it in the same preparation as listed on the fact sheet for remdesivir to actually take cobra venom or any other viper venom and inject it into horses to make monoclonal antibodies. When you read the emergency use authorization for remdesivir, it states, this one from January 21st, that every practitioner who administers this to a COVID patient, pediatric or not, you have to evaluate for what's called prothrombin time. Prothrombin time means, if it increases the prothrombin time, it means it's taking your blood's ability to coagulate and making it longer. So it thins your blood. You can't clot.
Right.
You will internally bleed to death. With remdesivir, it is stated on the emergency use authorization, every patient has to have its prothrombin time checked before you give it remdesivir and during treatment. Do you know what king cobra venom does to the blood?
It makes it so that it can't clot.
It makes it so it can't clot. You know what one of the evidences is? It's prothrombin time. And if you look at the CDC's website and the NIH's website on the adverse events from remdesivir called Veklury, it actually says it increases prothrombin time, which is exactly what king cobra venom does to the human body. And remdesivir is lyophilized peptides, proteins of king cobra venom. The University of Arizona published last summer a paper. When they actually evaluated the blood samples and tissues of people who died, hundreds of them, from two different hospitals, after being treated for COVID, which means they got what drug?
Remdesivir.
When they evaluated their blood, the title of their published article is...
Okay, we're going into a break here, and we'll finish this when we get back. Don't worry, it gets better, and you have to kind of wait for the end, but we will get to the end of it in the next segment. You're listening to Across the Border. This is a live prophecy reality edition. Stick around. Don't go anywhere. And we'll have some discussion on this between myself and those that are in the chat room. But I've got a few things to say. He's getting to his hypothesis, so you'll want to stick around for that to see where he's going with this and what it leads to. Hi, I'm Nicholas Arthur, and I'd like to introduce you to my latest book, Reformed Prophecy Interpretation, an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism in the 21st century. As with primitive biblical Christianity, historicism is the method of prophecy interpretation restored with the advent of the Protestant Reformation, and had become so widely held that for a long time it was called the Protestant view. My book is not so much about the errors of dispensationalism or amillennialism. Rather, it is about the historicist alternative to understanding many of the same passages from the vantage point of prophecy fulfilled in history. For those that desire more than mere hypotheses bolstered with conjectured speculation, those who require explicit biblical exegesis and verified historical fulfillment, and are not willing to accept speculation as anything other than what it is, speculation, not truth. This book is for you. Over the last century, this method of interpretation has become almost completely forgotten, even by Protestants, in the face of a method that is based almost entirely on future speculation, rather than fulfilled prophecy in history. In my book, I examine the reasons for this and investigate some of the prophecy which has been fulfilled in the interim, as well as present an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism to the 21st century. If you're interested in a copy of my book, you can go to my website, crosstheborder.org, and get more information there. Or you may also find it at Amazon.
Welcome back. Why do some people, seemingly perfectly healthy, die from COVID and others don't? It's a question baffling experts during this pandemic.
That sure is. A new research from the University of Arizona suggests we're closer to getting an answer. As Team 12's Jess Winters explains, it seems to boil down to an enzyme that's also found in rattlesnake venom.
What does this rattlesnake have to do with COVID-19 deaths?
We turned much of my research in my lab towards COVID a year and a half ago.
Chilton says he got blood samples from more than 100 patients in a New York ICU. They either had no COVID, a mild, moderate, or severe case of the virus. He did some fancy schmancy artificial intelligence in his lab and discovered two distinct patterns in the people who were dying from COVID.
These patterns, number one, told us that the vital organs were in trouble, but the other looked as if they were being attacked by some enzyme.
He says he then found the highest concentration of this enzyme that has ever been found in humans.
These levels attacking internal organs means multiple organ failure and death.
So where do the rattlesnakes come into play?
This enzyme is a humanized version, part of the same family as the active ingredient in snake venom.
In simple terms, this enzyme related to rattlesnake venom that's been found in humans is likely causing tremendous damage, leading to COVID-19 deaths.
And then they take you through all of the elevated enzymes in the blood samples of these people that are naturally found in rattlesnake venom and viper venom that are in levels they've never seen before. Do you want to know how they got there? 5 to 10 days of remdesivir. They've known since 2005 if you inject a mouse with cobra venom, you inject it, like they're doing with remdesivir, injecting it into your veins, it actually causes a cytokine storm in the lungs of all animals. I am convinced that COVID-19 is not a respiratory virus of any kind. It is actually venom poisoning, and they're using, I believe, synthesized peptides and proteins from venoms of snakes, and they're administering them and targeting them to certain people. Now, the amazing thing about these 19 toxins found in cobra venom, they're specifically sequenced to target specific organs, like the pancreas in a diabetic, like the heart in a heart disease patient, like the liver in a hepatitis patient.
Wait. So if I die because I'm a cancer patient, or if I die from some sort of liver-related function because I've had liver problems, if I die, then it'll be undetectable. It'll be untraceable. They're going to chalk it up. Of course this diabetic died.
This is the most original of all bioweapons ever. Snake venom. I mean, we know how poisonous snakes are. This is the most obvious bioweapon ever. When I say this is the most evil thing I've ever encountered in my entire life, could you ever have imagined that the one greatest symbol of evil in all of Christendom, what is the symbol of evil in Christianity?
The serpent.
The serpent. Can you think of anything more evil than envenomating the entire world with snake venom? And then injecting snake venom into your veins. And then using mRNA technology that they've been isolating from snake venom for years, that they know are unusually stable, more stable than any other mRNA they've isolated from other natural organisms for decades. 2015, they took mRNA from cobra venom, crate venom, and they actually wrapped the mRNA in nanoparticle hydrogel. How often have you heard about that with these new mRNA vaccines? And they made it even more stable. Then they actually added what's called dynabeads to those nanoparticle hydrogels surrounding the mRNA of snake venom. And it made it even more stable. It made it last longer. It made it easier to get inside of your cells. Do you know what dynabeads are? Magnetic metal nanoparticles.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
What's going on?
Your prayers have been answered, Donald. Apparently I'm dying.
Rob, could you get him a chair, please?
No. Fine. I've been poisoned.
Poisoned? By whom?
Someone within my organization. Someone with access to an offshore account that was used to fund recent attacks against me. 11 people had access to that account. Last evening, I called those 11 to a dinner to confront them. What happened next, I only remember pieces. The restaurant, what it looked like, not where it was. I remember holding a glass of wine, but not drinking it, although I'm sure I must have. I need you to find the pharmacotoxicologist who I believe crafted the deadly cocktail and get the antidote from him.
What do you know about him?
There's a man who told me he's known as...
The apothecary.
A druggist whose potions hijack the immune system, causing any number of allergic reactions. Each one impossible to identify unless you know what you're looking for. An exotic venom might replicate a drug overdose. A personally tailored allergic reaction might trigger cardiovascular collapse.
The apothecary can create embolisms, aneurysms, inhibit respiration, induce paralysis. We're looking for corticosteroids, bronchodilator. Go. I'm fine.
Corticosteroids.
I've lived my entire adult life surrounded by a corona of death. Some days I even long for it, but lately I find I'm unwilling to go gentle into that good night.
Bronchodilator.
That is the bad news.
There's good news.
The lab did find one distinct element in the molecular structure of the drops taken from Robert Dolly's apartment. A peptide unique to the venom of Dungaris flaviceps, also known as the red-headed krait.
When I saw this, I knew I was right. I knew I was supposed to see that because it was confirmation to me that other people knew this was planned all along, right. Which we've known this is a plan.
Yes.
The FBI figures out that it's actually peptides found in crate venom that poisoned Reddington. In the show, you learn that he was poisoned by drinking. It was put in his drink. And then I realized something. I realized how they've been spreading this.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually told my wife 6 months prior to this that it's very odd when you go on the CDC's website that they have this wastewater surveillance tab on the COVID data tracker site. And they have 400 water testing sites in 37 cities in this country. What no one knows is the data from the CDC between January of 2020 and September of 2020 in relationship to their water testing of these 37 cities. They only let people know they were doing it in September of 2020 and now releasing that data. They now just announced 2 weeks ago, Walensky did, of the CDC, that they're now upping their water testing. They say and have been reporting to media outlets that how it works is they are PCR testing our wastewater because we, as we get COVID-19, are pooping it in the water, and we're going to test our wastewater, and we can tell a city when there's high amounts of SARS-CoV-2 in the water, they can actually tell that same community 4 or 5 days later is going to be an outbreak of COVID-19 in that city.
Wait a minute. That's backwards.
That is completely backwards. If a community has had SARS-CoV-2 go through their body, right, they already had their symptoms. When they eliminated the virus, supposedly the virus, out of their body and it ends up in your wastewater, you no longer have symptoms.
Right.
How could you know and then be able to confirm in the future, 4 to 5 days from now, when we find it in your wastewater supply from your city, when we see it being shed in your water, 4 to 5 days later, we can actually tell you there's going to be an outbreak in your city? It's not because there's an outbreak in that city. Just like in the show Blacklist, I had to break this down for every aspect of COVID. One thing that's been very unique to COVID is this sense of loss of taste and smell that lasts for months,
even years.
Holy cow. I had no idea. They already knew this did this to people. When you drink it, for the people who are the natural healers or the individuals who've got bitten, when they actually suck the venom of cobra into their mouth and then spit it out, they have this loss of taste and smell that can last 12 months, a year and a half. It's just from having it exposed in the mouth, which is exactly what's happening when it's being put into our water. Now, the thing about the water is this. They are using the water systems because they can target specific demographics. They are absolutely confident that the peptides they have chosen for COVID circulated throughout the earth and throughout the populace specifically targets, and the vaccines and the mRNA in the vaccines specifically target organs like your spleen, your pancreas for diabetics, that's a concern, brain tissue, liver tissue, lung tissue, and heart tissue. So if you already have a disease process of inflammation of any of those organs, you are the ones they're targeting.
So the people that work at my water treatment facility are aware of this? They're in on it?
No.
Okay.
No. The CDC's in on it. And the CDC is working with contracting companies to make sure they do it.
Mild and kind. Kent is kind-tasting to your taste buds, kind-tasting to your throat, so there's nothing to disturb your full enjoyment of the goodness of Kent's finest quality tobaccos. So get your taste buds back to normal.
There are nicotine receptors in your brainstem that control your diaphragm. Your diaphragm has to contract to be able to allow oxygen at all to get into your lungs. They are using crate venom and cobra venom, calling it COVID-19. You're drinking it. It's getting it into your brainstem, and it's paralyzing your diaphragm's ability to breathe. I cannot say this enough. In the very beginning of COVID, it was being reported around the world that the least demographic represented in hospitals being hospitalized for COVID-19 were smokers. Around the world, it was less than 5% of everybody in hospitals were actually smokers. And they found that odd only because this was a respiratory virus.
Doesn't make any sense.
Wouldn't it be that the people who are shoving tobacco and nicotine in their lungs would be more apt to be traumatized by a novel respiratory virus? But that's not what they saw. What was amazing is when this started getting reported in the first 6 months of COVID in 2020 around the world, guess what our federal government did? Anthony Fauci, the NIH, CDC, and the FDA all came out and started pumping in the media that there's no better time than right now to quit smoking. And they actually lied to you, and they lied to the entire world and said smokers are being hospitalized at rates higher than any other demographic. Well, the truth is, these nicotine receptors that are affected by cobra venom and crepe venom that control your ability to breathe and was causing your oxygen levels to fall, that on a pulse oximeter looks like you have pneumonia. No, you weren't. You were being paralyzed. Actually, you couldn't breathe. And your heart rhythm was actually being dropped by the same receptors. Do you know that smokers, nicotine ties to those, and then cobra venom and crepe venom can't bind to those receptors, so it can't paralyze your diaphragm? So they knew and were theorizing in France in April of 2020 when they figured out that it was the nicotine receptors that control the diaphragm's ability to breathe was what the spike protein was targeting, because it most looked like the neurotoxin, neuro being brain, neurotoxin of crepe and cobra venom. They started theorizing that studies need to be done, that we start giving people nicotine to protect them from getting COVID. It absolutely is known that nicotine is protective against COVID-19 because it stops these venoms from damaging and connecting to these nicotine receptors in your brain that control your diaphragm's ability to breathe. But once you go into a hospital because you can't breathe, if you're not a smoker and you don't do the nicotine, they put you on remdesivir. Remdesivir is venom from a cobra. It's attaching itself to the nicotine receptors in your brain. You then can't breathe. And then at the same time, it destroys the inside of your lungs through what's called a cytokine storm. That is what cobra venom does.
We've got to get this guy on a ventilator, or this gal.
And then they say they got to put you on a ventilator. Why are they putting you on ventilators? They're putting you on ventilators because they're going to put you on sedation drugs to put you on the vent. And they can actually murder you by euthanizing you with drugs that act similarly to the venom. They have to sedate you because when they go to shove a tube down your trachea to get into your lungs,
you'll pull it out.
You'll pull it out, or you'll fight them as they're trying to shove it in there. So they have to sedate you. So they use morphine, fentanyl, Presidex, lorazepam, or midazolam. Those five drugs act on the same centers of your brain that control the diaphragm's breathing and your heart's ability to breathe. These drugs are euthanizing drugs, and they actually will put you on these protocols at the same time they have you on remdesivir. The entire attempt is to slow down your breathing and your diaphragm, and you will die. They've got the cocktail down pat. The average person dies on day 9 of COVID-19 hospitalized treatment. They only authorize, per the NIH, 2 5-day treatments of remdesivir. It's amazing that the 9th day is the day that most people died. In February of 2020, the Wall Street Journal was allowed to produce an article, and they particularly speak to the word virus in coronavirus, pandemic. And in this article, it actually states that the Latin definition historically for virus, originally and historically, virus meant and means venom. So I started to wonder, well, what about the name Corona? Does it have a Latin definition or a definition at all? So I actually looked up what's the definition. And on dictionary.com, it brings up 13 definitions. Corona, religiously, ecclesiastically, means gold ribbon at the base of a mitre. And I didn't know what a mitre was. So I copied it and pasted it and then hit images. So this actually could read the Pope's venom, pandemic. It also can read crown. Corona means crown also in Latin terms. Corona means crown. Visually, we see kings represented with a crown symbol.
Right.
So put that together for me. King.
Cobra.
Venom. It actually could read King Cobra Venom Pandemic. I've said this for about a year now that I actually believe this is more of a religious war on the entire world. I've been adamant about that, actually. The message of Christ forever was, he's the master healer. And faith precedes all miracles, not vaccines.
He made a blind man see.
Right.
He touched the leper.
So why are we actually putting more faith in drugs, and why is a man of the cloth supposedly putting more faith in science and a drug than he is in telling people to pray to God? God's greatest creation was you. And you are made up of a DNA strand of genetics that are unique to you. If I was going to do something incredibly evil, how ironic would it be that the Catholic Church or whoever would use the one symbol of an animal that represents evil in all religion, which is either the snake or the dragon, which is actually just a snake with legs. You take that snake or that serpent and you figure out how to isolate genes from that serpent and get those genes of that serpent to insert itself into your God-given created DNA. I think this is the plan all along, was to get the serpent's, the evil one's DNA into your God-created DNA. And they figured out how to do it with this mRNA technology. They're using mRNA, which is mRNA extracted from, I believe, the king cobra venom. The king cobra venom. And I think they want to get that venom inside of you and make you a hybrid of Satan, no longer just belonging to God or a creation of God's. When I say that the mRNA inside of the Pfizer Moderna shots is actually derived from snake venom,
yeah,
it just sounds crazy, right?
It's, yes.
But I want you to read.
Do you know?
I want you to read from July 6th, last year, 2021, the co-founder of Moderna. Read the title, show it to the camera.
Moderna co-founder using mRNA technology to treat venomous snake bites.
It goes on to say that he's going to help create and co-found a company called Opherix. Look it up. It's phenomenal. Opherix. Opherix is a brand new company based in San Francisco that actually is going to solely work on creating anti-venom drugs for snake bites. Guess who funds this thing? The whole company.
The Department of Defense.
The Department of Defense, the Wellcome Trust Fund, and the United Nations. Incredible. Okay. All right. So this is great.
Let's wrap our heads around that for a second. How many snake bite victims are there?
It's like 100,000 people.
100,000 people will die from snake bites, but this is enough for the CEO of Moderna to make that this is a huge issue. But not only that, but the importance for the Department of Defense and for the United Nations to get on board and to fund such a venture.
Dr. Hoff out of Canada, after evaluating his vaccinated patients, was able to determine those who had received the mRNA vaccines. They all had elevated D-dimers, and he checked that because they all complained of extreme fatigue, like long haulers, COVID symptoms. And he was enlightened to do this D-dimer test and then found every single one of them had elevated D-dimers. Now, I want you to read on Medscape. I just printed this out from Medscape.com. What is it that medical doctors are trained to look for when they see elevated D-dimers? So read the title, and I want you to read the fifth bullet point.
How are elevated D-dimer levels interpreted? Snake venom poisoning.
So even medical doctors are trained to look for elevated D-dimers and to know that this is a possible snake venom poisoning. And notice they didn't use the word snake bite victim.
Right.
Snake venom poisoning. And I was like, oh my God, it's in the mRNA shots for sure. This is why you're seeing this. They even talk about it on here that D-dimer is a reflection of fibrinogen and its ability to control coagulation. And that it's usually at normal low levels inside of people who are fine. But then these D-dimers get extremely elevated after snake
venom poisoning.
Venom poisoning. The kidney failure caused by remdesivir is the number one organ targeted by king cobra venom. It's the number one. There isn't anything in relationship to symptomatology of COVID-19, injuries post COVID-19 vaccines, treatment with remdesivir that cannot be correlated back in research studies to venom from cobras, crates, and other vipers.
So when somebody gets bit by a snake, particularly a king cobra or a crate, what is the long-term prognosis for these people? So these people that have been injected, this jab remorse, I mean, there's been a lot of people like Zev Zelenko, who I respect tremendously, has come out and said, you have a ticking time bomb inside of you. Is that true?
Yeah, your body has now been had gene sequences put into you or peptides put into you of venom.
Yeah.
And that actually continues, particularly one bite after another, those disease processes become even more exaggerated. This is why they want to continue doing the booster shot program. My wife and I are driving back towards our home, and it's late afternoon. We dropped her car off at a mechanic shop, and she said, "You need to get something to eat because I'll get hangry, a little snippy. When I get hungry, it's like 2:30 in the afternoon." And she goes, "Where would you like to eat?" And I said, "Let's just go to this Chinese restaurant right here." And she looked at me. She goes, "Really? We haven't had Chinese food in years. I mean, it's been at least 5 years." So we go into this Payway, order the food. I go to the bathroom. By the time I come out to the bathroom and sit down, my wife's already got the foods sat in front of her, the plates. And then there's two fortune cookies that Jane has selected out of a barrel. But my wife is a desserts first kind of girl. So when I sat down at the table, the fortune cookie's already open and she's already eaten it. And the fortune cookie's sitting there above her. The fortune is sitting above her plate. So I sit down, I look at her and I said, "Well, I guess I'll eat my dessert first too. Since you did yours, I guess I'll open up my fortune cookie." So I opened the fortune cookie and I cracked it open. And it's opposite the plate, across the plate. And when I cracked it open, the back of the paper of the fortune was facing me. And I quickly saw it as I separated the two ends, and I just spun it around real quick to face me. And I picked it up and read it to my wife, and it reads something like this: "All of the world's greatest riches begin with one penny." I said,
"How profound."
I looked at Jane, I was like, "Of course it does. Like, who doesn't know that, right?" And I sat it down, and she's looking at me as she's eating. She's like, "Are you going to eat?" And I was just staring at the actual paper fortune. And I said, "Yeah, I'll eat in a minute." And she goes, "What's wrong?" And I said, "It's what's on the back of that fortune cookie that's freaking me out." And usually you'll see like lottery numbers or something random on the back of those cookies. But what I noticed was a name on the back of that fortune. In parentheses on the back of that fortune, as soon as I opened it, are two names.
Okay, well, there it is. That's the video, and there's a lot to unpack there. Let's see. Yep, I guess everything's working right. Well, this is my third time watching it, I have to admit. I watched it twice yesterday and last night. And I'm skeptical about the water thing, and they called it Watch the Water. I'm not sure that they're putting this in the water, that it would be effective enough in so diluted in water systems that it would do this. But if this is actually going on, there's some way in that they could target it, I guess. So that hypothesis is a little shaky to me, but the hypothesis that the transhuman jab contains this material is not so far-fetched, given the evidence. So perhaps when we come back in the next hour, if you have any ideas, any observations, you can share them with me, and we'll get into news and current events in this next hour. Okay, you're listening to Across the Border. This is a live Prophecy Reality edition. We will be back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe, so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. You're listening Across the Border. This is a live prophecy reality edition. We do this once a week. We take a break from our regular Bible studies, and I hope everyone's enjoying it. I'm playing my Revelation exposition at this time, and that'll play through next week. And if you missed any part of that, well, it started Monday, and you can find it on our podcast page in the archives for the week. And then afterwards, we're going to get back into Isaiah. So I hope you're enjoying that and being edified by that. Anyway, in the first hour, we played, for the most part, Watch the Water, the Stu Peters documentary. And, you know, I noticed something which I hadn't noticed before. And that was, produced by Lauren Witzke. I don't know if you remember Lauren Witzke and Edward Zoll, two people that used to be on True News were let go. And they ended up working with Stu Peters on his network. And, I'd say they're earning their money, because I know this video has already reached a million views just since Monday on Rumble, 50,000 on BitChute, and everywhere else that they don't have counters. So they've already got that many views. I could never even hope to get that many views on anything I ever do. But I don't really care. Everyone could have all the fame in the world. That's all. But I do appreciate that Stu Peters News and the work that this crew is doing. Let's see, I have a call here. Your name and where you're calling from. You are on the air with Nicholas. Ah. Well, sure. Keep watching. Maybe you'll get it. Maybe you won't. Anyway, actually, see, the phone does work, and if you want to call in and talk, you are welcome. But anyway, the reason I mention that is because yesterday I watched True News, because I didn't see it Monday, but I watched it yesterday, or was that yesterday, or the day before, one of those days. And True News, Rick Wiles again said that he's quitting the news. Yeah, until he figures out that nobody wants to watch him if he doesn't do the news, because that's what made him famous and brought all his money and fame and you know, $100,000 studios, and it was doing the news for 20 years. So he wants to quit it again. It's bothering him. So, and I guess perhaps that's why he got rid of Lauren and Edward Zoll, because he's quitting the news. But anyway, he's still looking for the true Pope. Yeah. The one in exile, I guess, because he says that Pope Francis is not the true Pope. Yeah. That's what he said. Heard it out of his own mouth. So I guess he is a papist. He's just a rebellious papist, I guess. Yeah. He doesn't understand, obviously doesn't understand something. Anyway, Let's speaking of my critique of the item Watch the Water is that, let's see. I'm not sure about them putting, like I said, the snake venom in the water. It just seems so outrageous and ridiculous. But then, you know, I think that I do believe that there are evil men that want to kill most of the people on the planet. And they would do whatever it takes. Now, this will get you banned on YouTube and Google and other places to say things like this that I'm saying. But are you allowed to think about those things and critique them? Well, I guess if you agree that it's too outrageous to be true. But it is not so outrageous to think that those eugenicists that want to reduce the population of the world would do whatever it takes to carry out that agenda. Because how can you have an agenda with no means of carrying it out? Or not looking for a means to whereby to carry it out? And an agenda that results in the murder or death of most of the population of the earth, just having that agenda, even without a means to carry it out, makes you beyond a psychopathic evil that most people could even comprehend being that kind of a person that wants to kill most of mankind and somehow save themselves, or knowing that they're going to die themselves, and what, so that they can leave a better world behind, because they certainly have said in their hearts that there is no God. Otherwise, they wouldn't be acting like God. They'd leave death and life and the population of the earth in the hands of Almighty God, where it belongs. And the evidence with the transhuman jab and what are the contents of it, it seems that we've gotten several steps closer. And one thing that I notice in this documentary is they end up in the right place. Will this, for people that research more and more, this is where the truth will lead them, to the Antichrist and his shadow government that are overseeing the whole project that has been going on for many, many years, but has been pushed into warp speed lockstep. Those words describe everything about what's going on. They set a tentative date back in 1980, whenever it was that it came out in Economics magazine, that they would have a world currency by 2018. And when 2018 came, we talked about this for 20 years. Yeah. And when 2018 came and get it was obvious that they weren't able to pull it off, but they did set a new date. And with plans that they've been carrying out since 2020, the 10-year final push to the mark of the beast, and of course reducing the population of the earth as much as they can. And I believe that they're going to bring back that effort that they put on the, well, they've put it beyond the front page of the news. And they put something else, of course. They put the Ukraine war in the front page of the news. But they're going to bring it back, because I believe it's been very successful for them. So, anyway, it gives you much to think about. But like I said, will it start coming out? Will more people who love the truth, through their research, through trying to uncover the truth, will they be led to the right place? And that is to the Antichrist. And even so-called Christians, especially evangelicals who believe in the end-time Antichrist scheme of Francisco Ribera, which has been built upon for the last couple hundred years by many, many other people, with a pre-tribulation rapture added in, less than several hundred years ago, the pre-tribulation rapture and the 7-year tribulation deception being added into the mix, all speculation, of course, because it can be nothing but speculation because it's future. For the honest historicist, the only thing we can verify is that which is already past. And anything in the future is only speculation. So they want you to throw out what you know, what you can verify, and rely totally on speculation. But as this man in this documentary, in his research, it led him to the very top, to the very man of sin and his great apostasy as a focal point of all the evil from whence it emanates on the earth. And I believe more and more people are going to be led to that same conclusion. He ended up saying that I believe this is a spiritual war, that this is a religious war, that we have religious warfare going on here. So it led him to the right place. So the more people that research and more people that come to this conclusion, the more gratifying it is for me, because these are the things that we're saying. And with the added information revealed in this short documentary, 47 minutes, it just solidifies what we've been saying here and coming to the same focal point, and that is that the Antichrist is alive and well, and through his shadow government and with his shadow government, they together, with all of their subordinates, all the people that they have total control over, or more majority control over through the monetary system, whatever it takes, that's what they do to push forth their agenda. So more and more people will see, and we know this is in line with the prophecy, because I know sometime between now and the return of Jesus, which I figure to be about 30 years off. Okay, I don't exact the day or the year, but I figure about 2055. So that's as close as I'm going to guess it right now. That's the end of the sixth millennium and the beginning of the Sabbath millennium. Okay. But sometimes between now and then, the nations, the beast that represents the nations with the 10 horns, well, the 10 horns are going to turn on the whore church, the Antichrist, or the man of sin, the false prophet, and his great apostasy, and burn her with fire and destroy her off the face of the earth. That is prophesied to happen. So this is a beginning where I see with these people with no eye toward historicist prophecy or identifying the Antichrist, probably not even realizing what they've exposed or where it's going to lead, are starting to see. And so eventually enough people are going to see, even the people of the earth that aren't God's people, are going to see how they've been deceived and used, and their family members and their children have been murdered. And it all leads to the man of sin and his shadow government. Yeah, that's where it all leads to. Stephen says, you can see how that it is playing out in the world. Yeah. He says, I worked as a research for 30 years as a nurse, and it's like this in all things that they do. I was one of them, but the Lord called me out. Believe me, don't trust any of them. Just avoid their benefits and devices of evil. Yes, and I've avoided their benefits because I know they're going to bring this back and they're going to make it mandatory, because some places on earth it is mandatory for everyone 60 years older or older. It is mandatory for them to receive the jab because they want to get rid of the elderly. So they're going to do it to save your life, but it's the exact opposite. But I'm not taking anything. I don't take Socialist Security. I haven't seen a doctor since I was in my teens. And then I went in just for a checkup because I was in the foster system as a young teenager. Yeah, that's the last time I went to see a doctor. I do see a dentist and a dental hygienist twice a year. I do keep up my teeth. See, they're not falling out, although I have lost a few and replaced a few. So I do see a dentist, but no doctors. My doctor's name is Jesus. That's his name. And whatever physical traumas if I was in an accident or something, then I would want to go to a trauma center, which is a hospital. But I try to avoid that type of activity that leads me there, that would lead me there, especially at my age. But I do my own research, and I try to let my food be my medicine with supplements, and eating a right diet and avoiding poisons in my diet. I intend to maintain my health, and when I die, if I get deathly ill, then I will likely die like people have for 5 or 6, almost 6,000 years. Yeah. I don't need no heroic medicine to save my life so that I can exist as a slave to the medical establishment for a few more years to save me from what? My graduation to the resurrection of Jesus Christ? Yeah. My life is in God's hands, as is the death or my mortality. Okay, let's see. Yes, Jesuit fiends in the chat room. The biblical Lord Jesus Christ rebuke them all in their skullduggery. The God of heaven will have them in derision. So, and you know, yes, we did. There was a piece on Operation Mockingbird in that documentary too, so thank you for that. As and Corp Braid says, why is the transhuman jab taken in two jabs? And Dale corrects him and says, it's 4 now. Yeah. Yes, wonder why. Because I had vaccines when I was a child and in the school system, and boy, when you got that vaccine, that was it for life. You know, it trained your natural immune system for life. But wonder why the new ones don't work that way. Yeah. No, we don't wonder at all, do we? Because we know that there is a malevolent evil beyond description in the world today, and we see it absolutely at work for those that have eyes to see and ears to hear. And I did check out YouTube, and there was one guy on there. So they do allow people on YouTube to talk about the documentary that we just reviewed. But the guy was totally sold out to the mainstream narrative. Yeah, so they'll probably let his video stay up there, but I wouldn't count on this one staying up there. Okay, let's look into some other headline news items and see what we can say. The mask problem is, let's see. If I move this over here a little bit. Yes, the mask problem. Well, I don't need to say anything about the mask problem. I think enough has been said. The controllers of money, speaking of the Antichrist and his shadow government, energy and food, will control the world. And, you know, speaking of what the documentary, and there was the hypothesis, or there is an attempt, I think it by Bill Gates, who said something about that they were going to put vaccines on the food. Did I hear that right? Vaccines on the food. And so with him buying more farmland, he's the largest farmland owner in the United States, we may have to be careful about where our food comes from. Yeah, because if they can put it in the water, well, maybe they can put it in on the food too. So there's something there. Controllers of the money, that's the Antichrist. He's got that pat down. He does want to get it to one worldwide monetary system where everyone needs a mark to participate or even get on the internet. We all know where it's going. I've said this for years, and we see that it's getting closer and closer all the time. So ANFU Energy, you can see they control that too. Look what's happening in America. They want you to buy an electric car so they can shut it off if they want to. They can shut you off. They want you to have some kind of a biometric ID or mark system to even get on the internet. That'll be coming too. You won't be able to buy or sell food or whatever without a mark. That's the 2030 agenda. That's what they're working for. It says they will control the world. Well, we know that happens, that he's going to require everyone, small and great, rich and poor, just as it says in the last verse of chapter 13 of the Bible. So we know where that's going. And it's, of course, it says, can you say, and you could read it yourself there, that these two things that have been in the news and have been interchanged in the news are false flags. Okay. Let's see. Employers do not have an obligation to accommodate pregnant women. Yeah. Okay. I got nothing to say about that. I'm not an employer or an employee of anything. Let's see. If you have problems trusting, you will have problems living a life of freedom. Well, if your trust is in God, you'll have the freest life of all. But true freedom only comes in Christ. Every other freedom without Jesus, is just an illusion. It's no freedom at all. Okay? See, which leads to doom? Which leads to revival? Free money or frugality? Well, in a world where all the money is owned by the Antichrist, that's a hard conversation to have. But free money definitely leads to slavery, unless you really mean free money, which we don't have free money. We had a Federal Reserve coup of the U.S. Treasury in America in 1913. That was the end of free money. And then a few years later, 15 or so years later, they stole all the money, the gold, from the people. So free money is gone in America. And it's probably, I mean, you can have free money now, but you will be, God's people, the elect, will be excluded from that mark of the beast system that's coming on the whole earth. Okay, we're going to take another break here, and we'll get through these headlines and a couple articles, talk about the dollar and voting in the next segment. This is Prophecy Reality Worldview Weekly, and I'm Nicholas Arthur. We will be back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. Hi, I'm Nicholas Arthur, and I'd like to introduce you to my latest book, Reformed Prophecy Interpretation: An Apology for Reformed Premillennial Historicism in the 21st Century. As with primitive biblical Christianity, historicism is the method of prophecy interpretation restored with the advent of the Protestant Reformation, and had become so widely held that for a long time it was called the Protestant view. My book is not so much about the errors of dispensationalism or amillennialism. Rather, it is about the historicist alternative to understanding many of the same passages from the vantage point of prophecy fulfilled in history. For those that desire more than mere hypotheses bolstered with conjectured speculation, those who require explicit biblical exegesis and verified historical fulfillment, and are not willing to accept speculation as anything other than what it is, speculation, not truth, this book is for you. Over the last century, this method of interpretation has become almost completely forgotten, even by Protestants, in the face of a method that is based almost entirely on future speculation, rather than fulfilled prophecy in history. In my book, I examine the reasons for this and investigate some of the prophecy which has been fulfilled in the interim, as well as present an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism to the 21st century. If you're interested in a copy of my book, you can go to my website, crosstheborder.org, and get more information there. Or you may also find it at Amazon.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. You're listening to Cross Border. This is a live prophecy reality edition, and we're going through some news items. We talked about automobiles and the electric automobiles. There's an article by Eric Peters. The wagon that is not for the Volk anymore, the Volkswagen, used to be the car for the common man, but that's you can imagine what he has to say about that. It's always good to hear Eric Peters on David Knight's broadcast in the afternoon. Let's see, Sunday talks. Fauci warns of a potential return of the indoor mask mandate. Yes, he's warning us people, and some of us wonder, why isn't this guy in jail yet? Well, it's because the Antichrist controls the world, and he loves Fauci. And Fauci is a good servant, for the evil that is controlling our world today. Let's see if we got someone who's actually going to talk. Your name and where are you calling from? I hear nothing. Yep, I hear nothing. Okay. And I think we'll just jump into our several articles here. Where did they go? Oh, this one here. The dollar devours the euro. And so we see that we're getting closer and closer. This author, but Michael Hudson, the UNS Review, he says, it's now clear that today's escalation of the new Cold War was planned over a year ago, with serious strategy associated with America's plan to block Nord Stream 2 as part of its aim of blocking Western Europe, or NATO, from seeking prosperity by mutual trade and investment with China and Russia. Well, it seems that that's worked very well. It seems that they thought austerity was better than free trade. Yeah, so now they have to do without, and everyone has to pay more, including us Americans. As President Biden, U.S. National Security reports announced, China was seen as the major enemy, despite China's helpful role in enabling corporate America to drive down labor's wage rates by deindustrializing the U.S. economy in favor of Chinese industrialization. Yes, that's a project of that was a project of Kissinger, and now we have Kissinger's protege, Klaus Schwab. Yeah. China's growth was recognized as posing the ultimate terror, prosperity through socialism. Socialist industrialization always has been perceived to be the great enemy of the rentier economy that has taken over most nations in the century since World War I ended, and especially since the 1980s. The result today is a clash of economic systems. Socialist industrialization, which they could have never developed by themselves without ripping it off from a free nation, and neoliberal finance capitalism. Yeah. That makes the new Cold War against China implicit opening act of what threatens to be a long-drawn-out World War III. The U.S. strategy is to pry away China's most likely economic allies, especially Russia, Central Asia, South Asia, East Asia. The question was, where to start the carve-up and isolation? Now, I'm not... See, this author here, he doesn't see the big picture. He doesn't see the shadow government, even behind China, Russia, NATO, and America, because it's all the same in the hierarchy. The higher up you go, the more it all becomes, and from the same source. So all of these nations and all of these leaders are like pieces on a chessboard for him. And he's playing both sides. There you go. Only it's a real life chess game, is it not? And it's not either side on the board that wins. Yeah. Because the game isn't over until Christ comes and obliterates the whole board of nations. And it's blown away like the chaff of the threshing floor. China was seen as presenting the greatest opportunity to begin isolating both from China and from the NATO Eurozone, a sequence of increasingly severe and hopefully fatal sanctions against Russia was drawn up to block NATO from trading with it. All that was needed was to ignite the geopolitical earthquake was a casus belli. That was arranged easily enough. The escalating of the new Cold War could have been launched in the Near East over resistance to America's grabbing of Iraq oil fields or against Iran's and countries helping survive economically, or East Africa. But as we can see, they decided to move in Ukraine. And that's pretty much it. Now, the dollar devours the euro. And yes, there was something here that I wanted to jump down into. Oh, the prospective fall in the euro-dollar exchange rate. It is therefore appropriate to look at how this is likely to affect Western Europe's balance of payments and hence the euro's exchange rate against the dollar. Did I miss it? I read this a few days ago. European trade and investing prior to the war to impose sanctions had promised a rising mutual prosperity between Germany, France, and other NATO countries vis-a-vis Russia and China. And perhaps that's what they were afraid of. So we see the euro falling against the dollar. The dollar is still preeminent as the reserve currency of the world. and that's where it's going to stand for a while. All we can do pretty much is wait. See, the dollar vis-a-vis global South currencies, the full-blown version of the new Cold War triggered by the Ukraine war, risks turning into the opening salvo of World War III and is likely to last at least a decade, perhaps two, as the U.S. extends the fight between neoliberalism and socialism to encompass a worldwide conflict. Apart from the U.S. economic conquest of Europe, its strategies are seeking to lock in African, South American, and Asian countries along similar lines to what has been planned for Europe. And, you know, all of these leaders, like Joe Biden, got up in front of the whole nation the other day and exclaimed that that America, of course, under him and whoever follows him, is going to be the leading actor in the New World Order. And so he has dreams of grandeur. But the truth is that the New World Order is already under the control of the Antichrist. The Antichrist learned in his lessons from history, as we've discussed before, not to show his hand and to enjoy his control of the world without letting it out that he and his shadow government are the ones pulling the strings all over the earth, even in Washington, D.C. And I'll say it, Washington, D.C. is the head of the earth beast in the same way that the Vatican is the head of the sea beast. The people are just the victims, the people of the continent, or America, the 50 nation states of America, are not part of, they are separate from Washington, D.C., in the same way that the people of the 10 horned divisions of Western Europe are separate from the head of the beast there, which is installed at the Vatican. So we know where the control of the world really is, and we understand how people are trying to figure these things out. A sharp rise in energy and food prices will hit food deficit and oil deficit economies hard at the same time that their foreign dollar denominated debts to bondholders are falling due to the dollar's exchange rate is rising against their own currency. Can you believe it? When the dollar falls, even though it's rising now, the goal is to make it fall. But it shows you how little control, they don't have total control, because there are certain things that have a life of their own, like the economy of North America. But they're going to do whatever it takes by the end of this decade to get their way and to topple the American economy. I'm speaking of the Antichrist and his shadow government. Though Joe Biden and his cronies may have illusions or illusions of grandeur in being the head of the new world or of a new world order, they will never be. They will always be puppets on strings, and not the head, but perhaps another part of the body of the new world order. So anyway, there's plenty to be learned here from this article. I'm going to jump into my next article where we'll talk about voting a little bit for those of you who have illusions about voting one way or the other. Just trying to get a prophetic worldview feel on a lot of these articles and what's going on in the world. That's why I call this Prophecy, Reality, Worldview Weekly, because I can do this once a week. I do agree with Rick Wiles on one thing. I wouldn't want to do the news every day. but I do like once a week stepping in here and giving a prophecy worldview, because I really don't care about the characters that much, but we can name some of them and we can see their contributions for the grand schemes of the Antichrist and his shadow government. And this one here, if you vote, you have no right to complain. But the saying in the world is, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. And I've said in the past many times that if you don't vote, you're the only one who has a right to complain because you didn't vote. Because when you vote, you join, you accede to the compact. The agreement says that whatever the result, you're happy to accept it because you participated. But anyway, this guy, this is from a book, and let me see, I'll find that book here somewhere. His book, and let's see. Now we'll get to it here in the article. Most citizens are not doing us any favor by voting. Asking everyone to vote is like asking everyone to litter. And the name of the book by Jason Brennan is Against Democracy. So this guy's writing a commentary or on this book. No, the title is not a typo. I mean, the opposite of the quip many people use after elections. If you don't vote, you have no right to complain. If you do vote, you absolutely have no right to complain. That's the opposite is the truth. Think about it. The romantic view of a democratic government is the idea that we all come together, display our values, and give our say. And through the miracles of aggregation, we receive a responsible government that somehow reflects those values. And for the next 4 years, we can happily spend our time on what really matters in life, while our appointed representatives carefully and competently steward our shared public goods in the best interest of our nation. See, that's what we thought. That's how it's supposed to work. But when I read that paragraph, all I can do is laugh. And perhaps you're joining me in laughing, going, it's not working that way at all, is it? He continues, if you didn't sneer while reading the previous paragraph, you have either never participated in a democracy, or you are in for a brutal shock once you lift your nose from that fairy tale-like view. One most astute critic of democracy, Jason Brennan, opens his book, Against the Democracy, by summarizing how his view differs from most others. Many of my colleagues, he says, entertain a somewhat romantic view of politics. Politics brings us together, educates and civilizes us, and makes us civic friends. I see politics as doing the opposite. It pulls us apart, stultifies and corrupts us, and makes us civic enemies. Yeah, that seems to be a true statement from my observation, at least over the last 10 years or so. It seemed like it brought us together formerly, but now it seems to have polarized the nation more than at any other time in my short existence here on the planet, okay, of almost 70 years. The big promise of democracy and universal suffrage is that you, yes, you, can make things better if you just get your buttocks off the couch, inform yourself, and go vote. In every election cycle, we are told that it's so important to get out the vote, which is weird because in many states in America, the electoral system is completely pointless to vote. And because why in the world would a candidate say, go vote, unless they meant go vote for me? The overlooked flip side of democracy's promise is that you, yes, you, might make things worse. For what do you know about tax rates or environmental legislation or how to structure health care or infrastructure needs or what ought to be taught in public schools? How could you possibly have any reasonable grasp of military procurement or how the federal government ought to spend it on whatever? I always find it peculiar that those in love with democracy are always so excited and serious in the months leading up to an important election, and always so disappointed afterwards. Their candidate did not win. And now they must reconcile that consequence with their own, clearly mistaken, worldview. The people didn't want what we were selling. How odd. Yeah, especially there are evil people in the world who will cheat, lie, kill, steal, and destroy. Three common reactions are: the opposition stole the election. It was Russia's fault. While the Russia story in America or Britain in 2016 never made much sense, it was a convenient scapegoat for those who couldn't rectify their devotion for democracy with the terrifying outcomes it had just delivered. For well-educated coastal elites, it was much easier in 2020-21 to ridicule the evil Trumpers for pursuing this avenue in the January 6th attacks, even though the shoe had been on the other foot in 2016. Democracy is about hurling crap at your opponent while conveniently forgetting what you yourself are, that you yourself are full of it. We need more education to get the message out. Clearly our campaign slogans weren't good enough, or our candidates didn't resonate with the electorate, or there is some ignorance or misunderstanding among the voting public, because, like all good and honest people, share our conviction of what is important. It couldn't possibly be that many other people disagree with our assessment of the world, the values we espouse, and the obvious policies we say we wish to pursue. So education is the problem, or the opposition stole the election, or finally, he says, the final reaction, he says, I hate my fellow countrymen. How could they be so stupid? Don't they understand that Trump, Hillary, Corbyn, Johnson, Macron, Le Pen is so clearly incompetent and dangerous and dumb that a good society requires my candidate to progress? What's so interesting about all these reactions is that they betray the foundational premise of a democracy, the aggregation of the public's will into one whole. The basic idea of democracy is that we put our values in a black box and go with the majority's candidate. That implies, of course, that there will be dissenters and minorities, and the system requires them to subject themselves to the rule of that majority. If you really supported democracy, you'd be equally thrilled regardless of which side wins. Yeah. And the article goes on. Yes, it does. Okay. So, the article goes on. And voting. What does anyone have to say about it? Oh, we're talking about the lunar landings in the chat room here. Yeah. Well, I am not a voter, because voting is insanity when you know they're cheating and they're going to do everything they can to cheat. And then they choose the candidates for you, and I don't like any of them. I mean, who's coming up in 2020? Trump? Are you going to vote for Trump? Is Trump going to fix things? Or who are they going to replace Biden with? You know, Obama? Yeah. What's the Michael Obama or Michelle Obama? That's her name. Its name. I don't know. I'm not being politically correct here, I'm sure, because I don't know which pronoun I'm supposed to use. And I certainly wouldn't qualify for the Supreme Court, because I don't know the definition of a woman anymore. This is how crazy our world is getting. Very crazy. That no matter what you say, you can't be sure of whether you're going to be doxxed, deplatformed, or get a strike by the world. And that's just how crazy it's getting. But I'll tell you what, here's the good news. It perfectly lines up with Scripture. Voting, we should vote every day. And we should vote for Jesus and vote to do the things that are pleasing to Him. That's the only vote that matters. Because what's going to happen in the world is going to happen. And I know a lot of people think it's very important, especially you get around election time and you just, you know, you might be tempted to go out there and vote. But yeah, I know that my vote, I know they've been cheating in California for decades. That's how they turned California. And then they just traveled across the nation and they perfected it here in California. And it didn't even work in 2016. They were so upset when what had worked for so long didn't work. But like I said, in the end, the best vote is to vote for Jesus and allow His Holy Spirit to work repentance in your life day by day. Walk the repentance road. There is nothing more important.